Hello and welcome to our University of Strathclyde podcast series, run out of the world-famous School of Education, right in the heart of the beautiful city of Glasgow in Scotland. We bring you a mix of meeting academic interviews, thought pieces, conversations and provocations on all things education, to give you a glimpse into our world-leading education research here at Strathclyde, and of course to stimulate your questions and thinking around the meaning, purpose and practice of education. In schools, in communities, and of course in all our lives.
Hello everyone, welcome to another podcast with the School of Education at the University of Strathclyde. And today we are speaking with Dr. Saima Saleji, who is a lecturer in the Department of Education at our university. Hello Saima.
Hello Dario.
Thank you first of all for agreeing to have a chat with us on this podcast. And could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background?
Thank you very much for having me, Dario. So who am I? I am Saima Saleji, lecturer in chemistry education. I've been working at Strathclyde from the last 3.5 years, exactly. And so what I mainly do is that I train science teachers to teach science in schools, mainly chemistry for secondary level, and I do primary science teaching as well. At the same time, I do have responsibilities of supervising BA, MA, PhD students, not only from science area, but, you know, in the leadership and management areas as well.
So I can imagine you are a busy a busy lecturer.
Yes, you can say that.
So, well, you have, well, you've mentioned that your area is science teaching. And what current approaches inform science learning these days?
I really liked, you know, when you said science learning with a big, you know, bow. Because this is the area that I think every teacher should be focusing on. Now, for me, science learning is complex, and teaching is not always the same as learning, as there are a number of factors that intervene between what teachers do and what learners makes of teaching. So I believe that we should focus on the lifelong learning approach, and not just the formal learning approach of science. For example, I really like this person's wordings. It's John Falk and Lynn Dakings in one of their papers. I don't remember the year of it, but in one of the papers, they pointed out that formal learning probably occupies 15% of a person's whole life. And the rest of 85% is actually informal learning of science. So with that, I think we should focus more on the learning of informal learning of science and how we can incorporate it in the school context.
Yes. So I think it's a very important point, a valid point indeed, to draw. Even though, of course, they are interconnected, I mean, teaching and learning, but to make sure that, or for us to understand that they're not the same or interchangeable concepts, but of course, learning will occur regardless of sometimes or not necessarily in a formal context. And in the case of formal science learning, if you will. How are teachers prepared to teach science?
Right. I'll start with saying that we are very fortunate. Our country is very fortunate that we train teachers before they enter into the teaching profession. And so when we train teachers, I see in most of the cases that they are trained well to teach the subject. They're trained well to teach the curriculum, but still I feel like the focus needs to be changed, and the changing focus, which they are, I think they're not very much prepared for, is that we are not making scientists. My ex-supervisor used to say, Professor Mike Watts used to say that if we have loads of scientists walking on the road, it will be the most boring place. Earth will be the most boring place to live on. And he's absolutely right. So what our teachers' aim should be to prepare scientifically literate pupils or scientifically literate people who can live a better life with the help of science in later in their lives, not only until they have a compulsory age of science education, even beyond that. I don't know whether I answered your question.
Oh, yes, it does, because it reminds me of other contexts where, for example, well, personally, I come from a language background, TESOL background, language teaching background. And in some contexts, teachers are prepared or they are trained as if they were being prepared to be linguists rather than teachers of, for example, another language. So this idea of people being trained as scientists reminded me of that parallel, if you will, from other contexts. But I believe that we all agree on this idea of preparing teachers to act upon a wide range of contexts that at the same time will enable students to be curious, perhaps, about science. And now that we are talking about teachers, and perhaps this third question is linked to your writing and recent publications, because listeners should know that you are a prolific author. And maybe in connection to, as I just said, to one of your recent volumes, do you believe that mentoring can help science teachers enhance their practice?
100%, yes. And so science mentoring or mentoring in general is always needed. It doesn't matter that if the teacher is just starting to teach, they are only student teachers, or they have 10 or 15 years of experience of teaching. Every teacher needs a good mentor. And some qualities of mentors, in science especially, I believe that when I talk to my student teachers asking that how's the mentoring, what happens in the mentoring meetings, they are brilliant. However, they only focus on the classroom observation that's been done. So mentoring doesn't only involve the practical aspect of classroom teaching, but it's wider than that. It's bigger than that. So it's about giving the mentee the kind of independence, autonomy, and how they want to proceed on. And somehow we start having, as mentor myself, I've done these things as well, but we assume that if this person is a student teacher, they know nothing. We have to teach them each and everything. Or if someone has 10 years of experience, oh, of course they know this. So our assumptions as mentors needs to change. And every person is different. We can't, you know, that one size fit all thing. We can't
Yes, true.
We can't do that. So these are some of the things that a mentor should be looking into.
And you've just mentioned that, well, of course, successful, let's say, or relevant mentoring very much depends on the qualities of the mentor. And drawing on your expertise and experience, what features do make a mentor a good mentor, do you think?
Yeah, a good mentor, from my experience, I think people who listen more, talk less. You know, at times it's a kind of top-down approach. And when you become a mentor, you feel like you have to give more. But it's a mentor-mentee relationship, a relationship where I found that as a mentor, I learn a lot from my mentees. And similarly, mentees learn from the mentor. And I think this is one of the qualities that should be looked into. Mentoring style should be flexible. Like we become flexible if we are teaching a particular topic or we are trying. So we become flexible when we are teaching children or kids or adults. At the same time, it should be flexible. If you think that this is the right way of mentoring, you're wrong. There's no right way of mentoring. It depends on person to person, from their mentee to mentee. It changes. So you need to be flexible with that. Modeling, when it comes to modeling best practice. Now, I go in the classroom, I give my lesson plan to my mentee and say, look, this is the modeling of me doing the best lesson. Fractional distillation, absolutely wrong. Mm-hmm. If you really want to model your expertise, you need to involve your mentee in planning the lesson, in teaching the lesson, or at least having an open-ended discussion. What did you like about the lesson? What you didn't like about the lesson? What do you think can be, you know, built up later? So these are some of the points that I think of in terms of mentoring, good, effective mentoring.
Yes. Yes, I absolutely agree with you, because there is even this notion in terms of like dynamics of interaction where the mentee is not a person with no knowledge at all or no experience. So as you said before, there is this mutual understanding where both are learning and profiting from each other's experiences and knowledge and whatnot, and somehow co-constructing the classroom or a teaching situation that is supposed to be a model of teaching, but you know, it could be conceived as a co-constructed example of good practice. No, rather than best practice, but you know, this is like the practice that might be working, hopefully might work in this situation. And Saima, in terms of mentoring and mentoring science, do you think this could be, you know, this relationship of mentoring and mentee, do you think that it could be something that could be applicable to enhancing learning, that is to say, making students perhaps become mentors and mentees in their own right among themselves? I have just come up with this.
No, absolutely.
This question and idea, yes.
A very good suggestion. And there are things going on at the moment as well, where students are taking as researchers and in science, and then they go to adults and they talk about it as a mentor-mentee relationship. So absolutely. And I also think that sometimes I do go for training, and one of my training nowadays is to for a mentor-mentee thing. And the thing that I loved about it was that a student teacher is mentoring me and I'm the mentee.
Oh, so that's lovely.
It's lovely, and you won't believe how much I'm learning from that. So 100% yes. So even in a school situation or in higher education situation, we can do it much better, I think, so much easily because of the time and everything. But in school situation as well, absolutely, I agree with you.
Yes, yes. I've been reading just a little bit about mentoring, and there are some, I've come across some papers or experiences where the mentor doesn't necessarily need to be someone senior or more experienced. It could be a junior colleague or anyone actually who is willing to work together with someone else, and that's in the case of professionals, but also going on similar initiatives between among students, like from different years of education. Saima, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time, for your generosity, and we hope to hear more from you. Oh, just one more question before we go. Are you currently working on any research projects?
Yes, I am working research projects. So one of it is based on kind of decolonizing the science curriculum.
This is
the buzzword here. So I'm trying to figure out what ways, unintentionally teachers introduce some kind of ethnic, gender, religious inequality in the classroom, especially in science classroom, very much focused on Charles Darwin at the moment. Mm-hmm. so that's one. And the other one, I work in the area of inquiry-based learning approaches in primary school settings. There are many, but one more, which is very close to me, is it's on a BME, Black Asian Minority Ethnic backgrounds, and their success stories in science. So these are some of the projects I'm working at the moment.
Oh, well, wonderful projects indeed, that I'm sure we will be reading more about in the coming months and years, right? Good. Well, thank you, Saima, again for your time. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this this podcast. And stay tuned. More are coming up. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening in to our Strathclyde Education podcast series. We'll be back soon with another episode.